Do you have a spare $1.7 to $2 billion in your wallet, anybody? Could you buy the Minnesota Twins? Who do you want to buy the Minnesota Twins might be the bigger question. The team, the Pollad family, putting the team up for sale this week, or at least making known that they're planning on doing that. There's a lot to unpack here, Pete, not the least of which is this is a family-owned business that has been family-owned for a really long time. So it really is, I want to say first and foremost, it's kind of a sad day that the team is being put up for sale by the Pollads, because it was a family business. The Pollads were here. I don't think most people who are fans of this team are shedding a single tear, however.
No. they're not, and I think there's a good reason for some of that, quite frankly. I mean, the trade deadline, and even to start the season, and all the different things that we started off pretty nicely, Dave. I mean, we talked about it, but the problem was we were beating the teams that were not so great, and we weren't able to beat the teams with winning records. And all you got to do is take a look at the Minnesota Twins and say, well, they're pretty much exactly what we've thought all year and maybe for the last couple of years. They're kind of a coin flip. They're 50-50, and that's where we find ourselves. And it seems like this year we had the bats. They were working. We needed a little bit more from the pitching, in my opinion. And I say that as a casual baseball fan. But just looking at the numbers and how they all lined up, and I don't want to always be that guy who does that, but we just didn't pick up anybody. You know, we had the trade deadline, and there was an opportunity there because we have the bats, we need more help with pitching, and then suddenly we just started that tumble. And come September, we had one of the worst Septembers probably ever for the Minnesota Twins. So very disappointing, but now I guess the big question is, who buys them? How much are they really worth? And, you know, there's a lot of different is it somebody locally or is it somebody outside of Minnesota that really sees value here? Because when you look at it, we're at the bottom quartile of value in terms of baseball teams in the Major League Baseball. Some of them are up as much as $7 billion. We're talking about 1.3, 1.4, maybe it's 1.8, something like that. But the present values that I looked at was somewhere closer to $1.5 billion. And who's going to do that? Is it going to be the Marty Davis family? Cambria? Are they capable of doing it? Is Jeff
it going to be local at all?
Yeah, it could. Or could it be the guys that, you know, I'm still nervous about what they did, but Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lurie. You know, however that unfolds over time with the Timberwolves, but then you've got a guy like Jeff Bezos. The guy's only worth $205 billion. He could step in there right now. I don't know if he'd realize that it even got out of his bank account.
He wouldn't run down the hall for that much money.
According to some, it's only $204.9 billion.
So I exaggerated.
So really interestingly, Bezos is someone I was like, gosh, would he do that? Would he make a play for a baseball team, middle of the country, bottom quartile of the league, as you said. He did try to get the Commanders in 2023, but he was outbid. I think – so I'll say let's eliminate some, first of all, because I don't think Ziggy Wilf or Leopold are going to buy the Twins.
I don't think so either. No.
I think they're in on their business, and they're going places with their business. To me, one of the really interesting aspects here is the idea of – Mark Lurie, A-Rod, making this deal for a couple reasons. One, obviously, Alex Rodriguez is a baseball guy, so it makes a whole lot of sense if they decided that. Two, a reminder, we still don't know who actually owns the Timberwolves, right? I mean, I didn't miss news here that they're still fighting over this. If somehow Glenn Taylor remains the owner of the Timberwolves, Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez now have money to buy if they want to. I think that's really interesting. I don't love the idea of an out-of-state owner.
Although it works with the Vikings, right?
It does work with the Vikings.
The Vikings, when you look at the Wilfs and what they've been able to do, the stadium, about as beautiful as any stadium in all of football, I think, and the facilities that they've got and all of the time, the effort, and obviously the money that they've put into this thing. Now, the one thing about Bezos, and you brought that up as far as like the Washington Commanders, the NFL is a totally different world than I think Major League Baseball. And the valuations are completely different because I don't even know what the lowest valuation is right now in the NFL. But if I was to throw out a guess, I'd say the lowest is probably $4.5-5 billion at this point in time. And yeah. I might be wrong. It might be more than that. But when you look around with baseball, there's a lot of opportunities for people to be able to be involved, but it's not going to have the same – I don't think you have that same runway unless you're somebody like the Yankees who's already worth $8 billion and the Dodgers, they're worth like $6 billion. But I think there's a whole group of teams out there from San Diego on down where you're under $2 billion as far as what people are looking at. And who do these investors want to do that? That's the one interesting thing for Bezos, though, is like we said, if you're worth $204.9 billion, I don't know, is $1.6 billion or $1.8 billion going to even I don't even know if that registers. So, you know, there is a lot of wealth out there these days. But it's more of it gets tracked towards the NFL or the NBA and then maybe Major League Baseball.
What's really interesting, too, is you have to wonder if this is a good investment, either short term or long term. Right. I mean, the current labor deal expires in 2026. And we have seen already that owners, players are not seeing eye to eye on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be an issue. So, you know, who's going to swoop in buying the team when the idea that there may be a labor dispute coming up, mm-hmm. right, is how is that going to play out in some of that? So I love this. Okay, this is my favorite thing. I want right answers, but I also want wrong answers as to who could buy the Minnesota Twins on the stylesfinancial.com talking text line. 651-461-9226, right answers and or wrong answers only. Me personally, I would love to see The Rock buy a baseball team.
Oh boy,
it's going to be Miami imagine? Then the Marlins. They're only $1 billion. Could you imagine
the dog and pony show that the Twins would end up becoming if a former professional wrestler bought it? I'd say Vince McMahon, but I did watch the Netflix documentary, and I don't want any part of that mess.
Yeah, that's a mess.
That was outstanding. Have you seen that yet?
Front to back.
It's great. If you're a wrestling fan, or even if you're not a big wrestling fan, but loved it in the 80s and 90s, I'm totally going off topic here. It was one of the best documentaries I've seen in a long time.
Hey, Dave.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, sorry, because I was going to a different topic. But
well, so was I, so you go ahead.
Well, when I look at this, though, one that does make sense, because everybody always likes local, right? And you brought it up, local versus maybe the Wolves, who've done a great job, but nonetheless, they're not local. How about Cargill, McMillan? That one makes a lot of sense because they've got all the money in the world themselves. I mean, they're somewhere between $50 and $60 billion or more. Who knows? But the reality is, that keeps it right here at home, and it's not a big chunk for them, obviously, if you're talking about south of $2 billion. That isn't a huge bite. So that's one that intrigues me because they are so involved in the community in so many different ways, and I think that would be something that would be accepted pretty quickly in Major League Baseball.
We're going to have Phil Miller on at the end of this hour from the Star Tribune, and I would like to ask him about that because you got to believe that the Pollad family probably – will have their choice of, I mean, they can decide who they want to sell it to, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have to sell it to anybody. And for a family that bought, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say they bought that for like, they bought the franchise for what, $40 million? I mean, it was not even close to.
$44 million.
They're going to make a massive chunk of money on this team one way or the other. So I don't know if it's just as simple as who's the highest bidder. Although detractors of the family will probably say that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't happen to believe that. My guess is that they will try to find a high bidder who will also keep the team here. They don't want to see everything that they built just walk out the door and go to the junk. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see that. So they're going to have their choice here. And I like everything you're saying, Pete, is good, right? Cargill's got money. They stay here. They're here. It's local. So I could see a scenario where they only sell to a local buyer who wants to keep it in Minnesota. Is that going to cost a couple points of a million? Maybe. Does it really matter? I don't think so.
I can help them run it. I'd love to be a part of it.
There you go. You want Pete? You going to buy in? You're not.
No, not buy in. No. I just buy in. Do you? Just an employee.
Okay, for me.
It's like the legendary Polk High quarterback Al Bundy used to say. Do you have change for a million?
Yeah. That's great.
Who has change for a million? We'll
Dave
find
Schwartz
out.
Schwartz has change for a million.
Only if you'll take pennies and not as many. We'll have Phil Miller on with us at the bottom of this hour, 11:40. He'll join us. We'll talk more about the Twins. But coming up next, from Bally Sports North, Kevin Gorg is going to join us. He's on the road. He's up in Winnipeg. We're going to talk to him about the Wild. Tough loss last night in the shootout. We'll talk to him coming up next. You listen to The Huddle. We'd probably be shouting if they won in the shootout last night. Unfortunately, the Wild fall in a shootout last night to the Seattle Kraken, and they're on the road already up in Winnipeg. Kevin Gorg from Bally Sports North, and probably one of the nicest guys in the business and a good friend of mine for many, many years, joins us right now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline from Winnipeg. Gorgie, I know Winnipeg is nobody's favorite city. Do you have a favorite city that you travel to?
Yeah, good morning, Pete. Good morning, Dave. Great to be with you guys. Yeah, New York City for me, with a bullet. It's my absolute favorite. I couldn't live there. Way too much going on
right.
for a guy with attention deficit. But my gosh, it is such a fun place to go.
I want to talk a little bit first about the game last night. We saw two very pivotal plays. The elbow that was not a call, the trip that was a call, the Wild get an apology after that they thought it should have been different. What was your take on those two plays? I looked at them and I thought if you're going to call one, you have to call the other, or you don't call either. What was your thoughts?
I thought the call on Brodin was egregious. That's going to happen, right? You're going to play 82 games during the regular season. You're going to get good calls. You're going to get bad calls. It just was one of those calls where the Wild had a couple of power plays and, you know, the refs were, I think, looking for a way to give Seattle a power play. I think the ref didn't have a great look at the play and on instinct made the call. And then again, on review, you know, there was an apology involved and they missed the call. The Ekwin to me wasn't as much of a slam dunk because he's skating towards Larson. And Larson's natural movement is to shift his elbow up. So that one, to me, it's very unfortunate. I mean, it's a really tough play for Eck. But that one, to me, wasn't like an absolute you have to make that call. So that's just part of the game. And, you know, the Wild are coming off a year where they had a lot of, you know, not just players missing, but key players missing. And I know already having a guy with the value of Eck out tonight didn't make the trip is certainly something that, brings back bad memories from what happened last season.
In the overtime last night, and you brought up injuries, I go to Jared Spurgeon, who I don't believe played in overtime, which is somewhat different because I think we've seen him in years past. They go back and forth pretty much from Faber and Erickson Ek back and forth. What has Spurgeon looked like to you through these preseason? He only played one preseason game, and through these first two games, does he look like back and better than ever, or there's still an adjustment to be made for him?
He looks like Jared Spurgeon, which I think is the most important thing. He looks like the player he was before he had those surgeries last year, and that was a big question mark. Now, he played just short of 20 minutes last night. I know that with the way the defensive pairings are set up, that Faber, along with Brodin, are going to get the lion's share of the minutes, and you look at what those two guys put out there last night. You know, these guys are playing monster minutes. You know, Faber played over 28 minutes. Brodin played just short of 26. And so I think that's the way the Wild want to keep it. Both those guys can play those type of minutes. And I think as the season progresses, Spurgeon will play in the low 20s. Right now, I think they're trying to take it as slow as they can. Nights like tonight are going to be a challenge. You know, if you watched that game last night, it was a terrific hockey game. Great pace. It was physical. It was intense. But the bad news is both Seattle and Minnesota had to fly out late last night and play another game today, and Seattle's in Dallas, the Wild are here in Winnipeg, and when you have a game like that last night, I wonder what both these teams are going to have in the tank here on game two of the back-to-back.
Kevin, where you stand right now in terms of goalie? Obviously, we had Gustafson first and then Fleury, but what does it look like going forward, you know, for the rest of the season or at least the early part of this season?
I think the plan all along, Pete, was to get all these guys some game action early, so my best guess is we're going to see the young phenom that is Jesper Wallstedt make his season debut Tuesday in St. Louis. Gustafson gets the nod tonight. He's got awesome numbers against the Jets in his career. and they wanted to split the weekend and certainly get Marc-Andre Fleury the nod. And I think Fleury made some incredible saves during the game. The shootout certainly was something he was not happy about after the game, seeing him come off the ice. He was extremely disappointed. And it's going to be a challenge. Let's just not candy coat it. When you have three goalies and one of those goalies is a young kid, you're trying to get game action in Volstead, they're going to have to be super creative, get him down to Iowa for a couple of stints. He needs to play 40 to 60 games this year, whether it's with the Wild here in the big club or down in Des Moines with the Iowa club. So that'll be the biggest challenge. In a perfect world, you know, Fleury plays 20 to 25 games. Wallstead gets 20 to 25 games with the big club, and then Gustafson plays about half the season. But you guys know how these things work out. You can draw it all up on paper, and things can change in the blink of an eye. We're seeing that already with the lineup with Drew Erickson not on the trip here in Winnipeg.
Kevin Gorg, analyst for Bally Sports North, joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Kevin, I had to rub my eyes for a second and take another look. Zuccarello already has two goals in his first two games. I think it took him six or seven before he got that number last year. Does he look different, or is this just a product of the line mates in terms of how he's playing and the numbers he's putting up?
He looks terrific. And, you know, last year I think it wasn't just Matt Zuccarello. There were a lot of players. I'll put Matt Boldy in that category, yeah, too. They got off to such a slow start. He's rejuvenated. I think they've committed early in training camp to Zuccarello and Kaprizov being on the same line. And I've had conversations with Matt, and he really we make a lot of fun of the whole peanut butter and jelly thing and how tight they are on and off the ice. But it's legit. Like, he loves Kirill Kaprizov. He loves playing hockey with him. And I remember an interview I did with him last year in one of our post-game shows, and I asked him, I said, you're a wily veteran, but you don't look or feel like that when I see you around the rink. What's the secret to staying young? And he said, well, when your best buddy's a kid like Kirill, it keeps you young. And so I think there is something to that, Dave. I think you're spot on. He looks like a different hockey player. And I think those two together are great. And I think if you can get some chemistry developed with Boldy and Eck, which seems like it's there already, you've got two legitimate scoring lines, and you've got pieces that you can move around. But those four guys make up the core of your top two lines, Eck and Boldy on one line and Kaprizov and Zuccarello on the other. And every NHL team craves it. But if you have two high-end lines led by superstars, and Boldy and Kaprizov are superstars, it's going to work out. And so I think that part of it, the Wild are really happy with as they kind of embark on this full month of road hockey here in October.
Kevin, the next time you're in New York, you need to go to Hunt and Fish. It's a phenomenal steak joint right in Midtown. I'm just throwing it out there for you because it's awesome and not everybody knows about it. I think you'd look forward to it. I got a knife right there with my own name just written on it. I went there so often, so it's great, but it's something else for you to check out when you're in New York.
I have never been there, and I will absolutely check out Hunt and Fish. Every time I get the schedule, the first thing I do is, yeah, I look at when we go to New York. And so we have to wait till April, but we get a full week. We play New Jersey, we play the Rangers, we play the Islanders. We're out there for 7 days. So I'm absolutely going to take you up on that, and I'll probably take in a couple of Broadway shows along the way. But it's not until April. So hopefully we're still talking about a team that's playoff relevant, a team that's healthy. I've liked the early returns. I've liked training camp. I like the way they've played in these first couple of games. I really like the way this team is constructed. But they are a team that is not built to sustain a bunch of injuries. Most teams are not. But specifically the Wild with, you know, again, we keep talking about the Suter and Parisi and the landlock that has created. But that is the one area where if you get a bunch of key players hurt, like we saw last year, it spells trouble.
There's a couple of names here, Gorgie, that I'd like to give you, and I'm curious as to who you think will have the best season, these new guys. Yakov Trenyan, Merit Huznadinov, who did play a little bit last year, Jacob Lacko, and Liam Ogren, who I'm really excited to see in a game. Of those names, and I think they're both bottom six players, which one of those guys possibly makes a jump up to the top two lines, or at least has the most impact this season?
I think Liam Ogren's the guy with the most upside. I don't know, Schwartzy, how much opportunity he's going to get. It'll a lot depend on nights like tonight where one of your top six guys is out. But I think this kid showed last year in the brief stint he had at the end of the regular season, He's got the body. He's got the shot. He's got the skill set to be a big-time scorer at this level. Now, that being said, the most impressive of that group so far is Lauko. And they got him from Boston in that trade that sent Vinny Lattery out that way. And I've been super impressed with this kid's energy. You know, shift by shift, every time he's on the ice, something good seems to happen for the Wild. He's got a little grit to his game. He's dropped the mitts before. We saw that a couple times against the Wild when he played for Boston last year. He's good on the penalty kill, and he just is one of those energy guys. If you're going to be that guy, right, if you're going to be a guy that's likely going to be a third or fourth line guy, the one thing you have to bring to the table every single night is energy, and I've been super impressed with that, not just in these first two games, but throughout the training camp. He turned a lot of heads.
I agree. Ogram is, man, that dude's thick. I mean, he is a solid truck of a man.
He looks like a power forward in the NHL. Like,
he does.
We've been around the game long enough to see what that looks like. Matt Boldy was kind of the same way when he got here. You're like, my gosh, this kid could be a real big-time player. Now, here he is. Boldy, I think, is sitting on a 40-plus goal season. Ogren's not there yet. He's still a little green, but I think he just needs the chance to grow a little bit. And like Volstead, the challenge for Minnesota with these prime, superstar potential type of players is you've got to give them the chance to play in games. So let's just monitor for both Volstead and Ogren how much game action they get. I think they earn the right to be on that roster for opening night because they both had such good training camps. And for Ogren, it was a training camp that started slow and really got better as it went along. But they need game action. They need to play. And so that, for Bill Guerin and John Hines, will be the biggest challenge they have in front of them with those two young players this year.
KG, you're the best in the business, and I appreciate you giving us some time. I know it was a late night for you getting up to Winnipeg, so thanks for coming on this morning, brother.
Thanks, Kevin.
Hey, great time, guys, and I've got a new place to check out in New York, so this was great for me, too.
You're going to love it, man.
Can't wait.
Kevin Gorg, check him out, Bally Sports North. Honestly, and this is not blowing smoke, one of the most knowledgeable hockey minds on television. Appreciate your time today, brother. We will take a quick break, come back, and we'll talk a little more sports, probably going to some football as well. You're listening to The Huddle on 830 WCCO. You guys are both wearing shorts?
It's freezing. You want me to take a picture?
It's 49 degrees outside.
And?
It's a little chilly, but you throw a sweatshirt over the top of you and you got the shorts on. You're all good, man.
I wear shorts in 20 degree weather in the winter, Dave. Come on now. Minnesota tough.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a Minnesota thing. You're a Syracuse guy, right? I mean, you understand.
He's a Jersey snob.
I'm a Jersey snob. I don't know how that became a thing.
Yeah, that's what happened there?
DeRussia made that a thing with his open.
He did
open
make it a thing, didn't he? Our Vikings are undefeated, gentlemen.
One of only two. Undefeated.
But are they better than the Chiefs?
Right now they might be. The way they're playing, they really truly might be right now.
If you had to put a gun to my head and tell me which team I would
this is a family show.
This is WCCO. We get violent here.
Oh, my goodness.
If you had to put a gun to my head and said Chiefs or Vikings, honestly, with how this defense – I was talking to Pete before the show today – the scheme that B-Flow has out there is so disguisable that you don't know what's coming. And I think that would be Mahomes' kryptonite, is not knowing where that defense is going.
Mm-hmm. So, well, they also are missing Pacheco still, right?
Yes, yeah.
Which is huge.
And
huge.
I think they're also who just got hurt last week? I'm blanking on the name. Mahomes took him out, basically.
You're right. I forget who it was, but you're right. They have another... They have some more injuries, too. Rashee Rice.
Oh, yeah.
He's out. Mm-hmm. Clyde Edwards-Hilaire's out. Isaiah Pacheco's out.
And they still
Hollywood Brown is out. Yes. By the way, I had Pacheco and Brown both on my fantasy.
I did, too. Son of a gun.
Do you have Addison starting?
Also Christian McCaffrey.
Do you have Addison starting?
So 2 weeks ago, Pete, I had Jordan. When Addison had two touchdowns, I had him on my bench. And I had, I think it was Darnell Mooney in, and then so I flip-flopped him the next week, and then Darnell Mooney was on my bench and had all of the points, and Addison was in my lineup. I'm such a bad fantasy football player. I'm awful. As we look at this Vikings team, there's so many important guys on this roster right now, fellas. Yeah. So if not offense and defense, I just want one player, one player who is the most important to this team right now through five games and their success. Who is it for you?
Well, when I look at it, Dave, obviously Sam Darnold has done things that I didn't think he was capable of doing because of what he'd shown us in the previous years of being in the NFL. That being said, he still is I think he's kind of retreated a little bit from being on fire. But, you know, as you look at the Jets game, his completion percentage was 45%, and nobody really talked about that because we won the football game, right? So it was still okay. He got sacked four times. I like what Sam Darnold's been able to do. He's far exceeded everything that I was thinking that he looked like when I'd seen him in training camp and then previous years. But to find who is the MVP, there's a couple that I'm stuck with right now. Aaron Jones would be one because if he's healthy, that offense looks completely different than when he's not on the field. He catches the ball so well. He does an amazing job running the football, of course. He's second on the team behind JJ in terms of catches. He's done everything that you could ever have imagined coming from Green Bay and coming here. But Van Ginkle, there's just something.
Ah, you stole it.
Well, stole mine, too.
All right, I'm going to go.
Oh,
okay,
no.
Hold on. I got a couple other. I've got one more that I'll backpedal then and say, you guys can go with Van Ginkle. How about Pat Jones? Is that a name that anybody's ever really followed over the last couple of years? And meanwhile, the guy's got five sacks in five games. He's done everything you could ever want from a guy, you know, the position that he is. Grenard's played well as also with four sacks. So you could pick any of those three. Blake Cashman.
Yes.
Blake Cashman has had game after game after game. He right now, in my opinion, might be, at the level he's playing, the best linebacker in the NFL, right?
He's got 40 tackles this year.
Yeah, I mean, he makes big plays. He makes tackles. He helps shut down the running game. And those are all things that I was concerned about coming into this year because we've got a bunch of very small offensive or defensive players, especially the linebackers. That concerned me, but Blake Cashman's playing great.
Agreed.
Well, I was going to say, I had a couple lined up, but I had Van Ginkle in my number one just for the two pick sixes.
Oh, yeah.
Aaron Jones. I'll go with the easy one. It's Sam Darnold to me. I mean, yes, he's got four interceptions now, but he's got 11 touchdowns. He's got over 1,000 yards already. He's tied for second in the league in touchdowns. Sam Darnold.
But is he sliding a little bit, though, Dave? The last two games, he looks he's kind of regressed a little bit. Now I'm not.
He has.
Yeah,
he has.
Yeah, I'm not trying to alarm anybody or get.
No, I mean, look, his completion percentage dropped off quite a bit.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he was in the 60s. He was 71% completion percentage at Green Bay. Went 20 of 28, and then last week he goes 14 of 31 against the Jets, a defense that is a good defense for the Jets.
Yep.
But certainly not his best game. And I need to see one more game, and I truly do. It's got to be one more game, and it's got to be Detroit, whether I can truly say Sam Darnold is it. Because I want to see it against a really, really good team. The Giants were not a good team. San Francisco was okay. They're not a good team. Houston's okay. Not a great team. Green Bay, better. Much better team. And he was good there. Jets, eh. Not a great team. I want to see him play against Detroit. I want to see him play against legit and see how that comes out. And then I will be able to say that I think Sam Darnold is the second coming of Sam Bradford, only better.
No, I agree about the Van Ginkle part. I think that he's been there for the key moments that we've needed him there this season.
Two pick sixes.
Yeah, it's just every time that you need somebody to take away the ball, he's kind of like just a big weeping willow tree. He's such a tall dude that he's just like he's got the length of the arms. He's got every tool that you need in a defensive player to just go up there and grab it if you need to. It's nice having a big stocky guy like that on the other side for a change instead of us always hitting these trees.
He's a Wisconsin kid. He's got the long hair. What's not to like about Van Ginkle?
Get the Neutrogena out there, man. Yeah, get the long hair flowing for sure.
So, Pete, why then? Because I'll be honest, and I follow football pretty closely. Mm-hmm. Have I just not heard of Van Ginkle before this year because I'm not as big of a football fan? Or has this kid been there and we just happened to get him? Because I think – I was like, oh, okay, they signed Andrew Van Ginkle. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he's been legit.
He has been. And well, you get buried in certain places, right? I mean, there are places where, unfortunately, players go to die. Jacksonville, for instance. How many people outside of Trevor, how many people know a player on Jacksonville's team, right? And I think you could say that outside of the quarterback in Miami, you know, you could go to a lot of different places and say, you know, I don't know enough of these players. You know the whole team in the 49ers because we see them on TV all the time. And I think the Vikings have really done an amazing job in the offseason of what they did, who they signed, who they positioned with the team. And they fit. They fit with Biflo so well. And it surprised me. I'm the first to say that, too. That it surprised me because I felt like we were going maybe in the wrong direction. We've gone in the right direction with who we've put the money into. And with Grenard and Van Ginkel and Cashman and, you know, what we're seeing out of Pat Jones and the production he's had, he's been there, but he suddenly looks like a guy who wants to be an all-pro the way he's getting after the quarterback. And that, again, I think the defensive coordinator's done a really good job of putting the players in position to make plays. He's not out there, but those players are making those plays because he's doing it. But I'll tell you what, Sam Darnold is as good as he is because of Aaron Jones' ability to run the football and catch the football out of the backfield.
And how much better will he be if T.J. Hockenson ever comes back? I mean, let's not, again, we say this every week, but he's still not. He still doesn't have their best tight end, and arguably their second or third best receiver as well on the team.
So, Munt has filled in pretty good, though.
Johnny Munt's been great. Yep. He has. Yep. He has. So bye week this week. They got the week off after London and then against Detroit next week. That will be no doubt the game of the week to see, I think, Vikings and Detroit. We'll take a quick break, come back. We're going to talk some more Twins. Phil Miller from the Star Tribune is going to join us, and I want to know what in the world the Polads are going to do to try to sell this team, and who might they sell to? We'll ask him that question. You're listening to The Huddle on 830 WCCO. We're going to win, Twins, and we're going to score as long as it's not in October. That was a cheap shot. Sorry.
That was a cheap shot.
It was. I apologize. Joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Phil Miller from the Star Tribune writes about the Twins. Phil, I am curious from your standpoint, when you saw the news this week that the Polads were indeed going to be selling the Minnesota Twins, were you surprised by that at all, or had there been whispers about this coming for time?
I was very surprised because I had been, I wouldn't say pestering, because we don't see Joe Polad enough to pester him, but I had asked Joe a couple of times since he took over, do you see the family holding on for the long term? It's a very valuable asset, and he is the only one of Carl Polad's grandchildren to take an obvious interest in the game, in the team. He's the only one that we see around the ballpark. And so, but every time I had asked, he said, oh yeah, this is we're here for the long term. This is a community asset. I asked him in February, were you still on the team in 10 years? And he said, I hope so. I think so. I don't have any reason to think otherwise. But it's, you know, he doesn't own the team. He owns a share of the team. And I doubt that he was in favor of selling. It was his announcement because he runs the team. But he never gave any impression that he wanted to do anything other than work in the front office.
Phil, what are the expectations that we've got now, though? And we kicked around the idea of who would be somebody that might be in position to actually buy this, whether it's Lorian Rodriguez or Bezos or the Wilfs or Cargill. What do you think about that? What are the expectations? We all can kick around the dollar amount. Let's call it somewhere between $1.5 and $2 billion. But who's the best fit for the Twins?
Boy, it would be somebody that that does it for notoriety, for publicity, which, hey, great for me, I suppose. But because I think the truth is, you buy sports teams either out of ego, more or less, or for the long term value. I mean, the Twins were bought by the Polad family for $44 million, and they're looking to get $1.5 billion. So, but the trouble is, if you buy it for the long term, you don't want to lose money. Most
owners don't want to lose money as you go, and that's going to be difficult in baseball with TV realigning and the Twins revenues are going to decrease maybe as much as $40 million from where it was 2 years ago, just because Bally's has gone bankrupt and they're turning to a streaming option instead. So it's got to be somebody that can afford to not necessarily lose money every year, but not be looking to make a lot of money. And, you hate to say it, but the Mark Cubans of the world, maybe an Alex Rodriguez, if he has that kind of money behind him, can afford it. But it's not going to be an easy business to make a lot of money in going forward. So you need someone who has money to burn, basically.
Phil Miller from the Star Tribune. Phil, really quick here. We've got about 30 seconds. Do you mm-hmm. think that the Twins will be selective in who they take? In terms of they're going to try to have someone local, or is this just go to the highest bidder?
Well, local is their preference, I'm sure. But yeah. If it's a big difference, you can't blame them for looking to maximize. I hope some local people step forward, but I don't know that that will matter.
Phil, thanks so much for joining us. Thank you all for listening today. We'll see you next week.